Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio.
Wait, we're doing this on GarageBand?
Suprema, Suprema roll call.
Audition.
Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
Oh, Lord, my feelings.
Yeah.
I can't control.
Yeah.
Because we finna talk to.
Yeah.
Miss Mocha Soul.
Roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
My name is Sugar.
Yeah.
And I don't care.
Yeah.
Because I just met Tootie.
Yeah.
And we're friends with Blair.
Roll call. Suprema.
What do you mean,
Suprema,
we?
Roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
Every Wednesday.
Yeah.
That's when we're on.
Yeah.
My name's Boss Bill.
Yeah.
And that's one to grow on.
Roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
It's Laia.
Yeah.
With Kim the Queen.
Yeah.
If you're unsure.
Yeah.
Reference regime.
Roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call.
My name is
Suprema. Suprema roll call.
My name is Kimmy.
Yeah.
I'm in the house.
Yeah.
I'm in New York.
Yeah.
I saw a mouse.
Roll call. Suprema.
That was a wrap.
Check, please.
Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call.
I'm so glad someone gets me. I'm currently, as we speak, I'm currently house shopping right now. And my second question is, any vermin?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm out. I've given houses away because of...
What in the richness?
Oh, you've been in my... That my
the richness?
Wait, your current spouse?
You
the one that... Are you talking about...
Don't she still lives there? Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, that house.
Oh, yeah.
I saw a few rats in there. I was like, hey, Merry Christmas.
But you moved on, Dawn. Up, brother. Dawn, your sister. Yes, that's what he did.
Yes.
He gave the rat house to his sister.
I gave my rat house to my sister.
What a guy.
All right, guys. Questlove here. You may have heard me. We got Bill. We got Laia. We got Steve. And a family member who's still out getting cigarettes. He said that he'd come home eventually, but I don't know. I'm not being curt, but there's really no time to waste. And it's not every day a guy gets to interview his childhood celebrity.
What'd
question.
You say?
Anyway, I don't want to.
That makes two of us.
I don't want to waste a second on acting royalty. I will say that our guest today is pretty much maybe the reason I sort of kind of talk to bottles of syrup every pancake Saturday. Wait, in black households, is pancakes on a Saturday like an event?
Yes.
Yeah.
Any day of the
regular event.
Regular event.
No, what? For black households, like that was a treat.
Yes, that was a
Saturday
treat.
Saturday
pancakes. You ain't got time for it no other time of day. Yeah.
No, I survived off of like tasty cakes and quarter waters during the week. But Saturdays, yeah, that's when we rich. That's when the cat, you know, check out cash. The first black roller skater I ever knew.
What?
The reason why I fell in love with any girl who wore braces in my school.
Made them cute.
Oh yeah, the only person whose character truly understands what dejection from a Jackson means, especially when one works.
That story is so great.
Works so hard to give them gifts that they made with their own money. Anyway, and a fact that most people don't know: without this person, the empire known as Friends would have never existed. Yes, like, did you know this? Yeah, your beloved Chandler, Joey, Monica.
Why are you looking
and
at
Phoebe?
Me?
I
get it.
And Rachel.
I'm the Friends fan.
And here. No, I'm just saying.
You're not alone, Steve.
And Chad and Becky, whoever else is on Friends.
There was no Chad and Becky. You missed Joey.
Without our guest today, none of that would have been possible. Seriously, ladies and gentlemen, acting royalty on Questlove Supreme today. Welcome, incomparable Madam Kimberly Victoria Fields.
Yes.
Questlove Supreme. Finally.
What an intro. Finally. Man, how long we've not been trying to do this.
I know. We've been doing a 5-minute intro.
Wow. Thank you for that intro.
I'm getting better.
First little sister on TV, for real.
Seriously.
That's dope.
Seriously. We have so many questions to ask in so little time. So,
okay.
Kim, where were you born?
Harlem, right here.
Really?
And I'm Kim. I was born Kim Victoria, not Kimberly.
Oh.
Kim Victoria.
Yes.
Just Kim is three letters. Okay.
Yes.
We will.
I was trying to. Because you're Questlove, you can call me Kimberly, even though that ain't
no,
my
no,
name.
We would never. I was just trying to give you the proper respect. Respect due. What were your memories of Harlem growing? How long did you live there?
6 years.
Really?
Yeah, from 0 to 6.
So what were your memories of Harlem growing up? Is it anything close to the gentrified?
Well, not the gentrified part, no. But, I mean, like, my building is still there. My park is still there. My beloved St. Nicholas Park, the whole grass lawn that we used to sled down in, you know, cardboard boxes because who had sleds, you know.
Right.
Or you get them old busted up tires and you slide down.
Right, right.
The cracks on the sidewalk in front of my grandmother's building, which was 654 St. Nick. So, you know, it's nothing but love. The other day, I went in front of my elementary school, PS92.
Really?
Yep. Still looks the same.
Any other notable peers of yours growing up in that area or?
I don't remember where they lived, but Danielle Spencer, who played Dee on What's Happening.
Right.
So basically, my mom and a whole bunch of other amazingly talented actors would go to acting school in St. Philip's Church. Al Fan used to hold his classes there,
okay.
The Al Fan Theatrical Ensemble. And so basically all of like the dopest actors on the planet were in New York and in that environment in the early 70s. And so, you know, some of them who had kids, they couldn't afford babysitters like us. And so we would be at the acting classes imitating what we saw our parents doing to keep ourselves entertained. And so Danielle was there because her stepdad, Tim Pelt, God rest his soul, he was there.
And your mother was a part of this troupe?
Yes.
Okay, so we would be remiss. Are you tired of people coming up to you saying how much your mom has traumatized them all their lives? No, I don't need that evil cackle right now.
I know.
But
I got chills.
I'm just saying.
I thought about her. I got chills.
Yes, of course, now that we're adults, we know what acting is.
Yes.
But let's take it back like 30 years or whatever.
Yeah.
How many of your friends were traumatized at the sight of your mom?
Yeah.
For those that haven't seen Good Times.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Please, tell them, Bill.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Kim's mother played, what was her?
Penny.
Well, not, I Penny's know Penny, mom. But what was her character's name? I can't remember.
Mrs. Gordon.
Mrs. Gordon, yes.
Yeah.
Mrs. Gordon.
Her name was.
Yeah.
We never said her name.
That was her name.
She was Penny's mom. Penny, of course, was Janet Jackson, and Penny was being abused by her mother.
Woo, child.
And,
yes,
and
burned with an iron, I said.
Miss Chip Fields played the hell out of that part.
Yes, she did. Yes, she did.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, like, that hit home.
Like, if I ever see her in the street, you know, it's hat, tip of the hat, and, you know, what do you need? What can I get for you?
So you're just saying that watching your mother in these workshops prompted you to also follow suit? Or
No, that was just the intro and kind of the environment to just be exposed to it all. It wasn't until I actually saw her and saw the environment when Mom was doing Hello, Dolly! With Pearl Bailey on Broadway and on tour that I really started getting a sense of all that goes into this, you know, and the people who were a part of the craft and makeup and hair and wardrobe and sets and props and all of that. And then when you see it all come together as a little kid, you know, looking at it on stage, and that's really what got me into it.
So was it commercials first that what was your very first commercial?
You know.
Mrs. Butterworth was your first?
Yeah, that was my first.
So with technology not being as advanced as it was back then, were you just speaking to
a still bottle?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That was one, you know.
Yeah. It was just a bottle that was just there.
Oh, another Questlove first. So I'll say that Baby I'm Back was technically the first sitcom I was allowed to watch.
Okay.
I wasn't allowed to watch TV much back then, but because you guys came on right after the Jacksons. In 76, 77, the Jacksons had
yes, they did. Their summer specials.
Yeah, variety show. Mm-hmm. And so you were, I think your character was Angie.
Yes.
And Baby, I'm Back with, it was Damon Wilson's
DeMond.
First.
DeMond Wilson. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I never, that's how he pronounced his name?
Yeah. Yeah.
DeMond.
DeMond.
Like he was a Shakespearean actor.
He may have been. I know he was a preacher too, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. DeMond Wilson.
Mm-hmm. And Denise
and
Nicholas.
Great, and the great yes. Denise Nicholas.
Yes,
who played
yes.
your brother on the show?
Tony Holmes.
Okay. I don't know what became of him or whatever, but yeah. My mom loved Denise Nicholas, so I guess. Mm-hmm. You know,
everybody's it was, mom everybody loved Denise. Did,
yes.
Yeah.
And everybody's uncle loved Denise. My uncle. Yeah. No, he was so happy when I got that job.
Really?
Yes.
Everyone
oh,
volunteered
yes, honey.
To.
Oh,
up
yeah.
until the heat of the night.
Yep.
Up until
yeah, I mean, well, that's when the last time you really started seeing her.
Oh, okay. I'm like, why are you snarking? He's Nicholas.
Oh, praise her.
What? So that was your very first sitcom.
Yes.
What? Mm-hmm. So, how easy was it for you to adjust to that environment?
It was definitely a learning experience, you know. For example, I didn't know about continuity. And so we did a scene and I was supposed to come into the kitchen area from having been awakened. And so we did the take, you know, one time. And then I thought I was backstage and I thought, well, if I was asleep, my hair should be a little messy. So I mussed my hair and then they came out and they were like, cut? Who touched her hair? What happened? So that was the first time I learned about continuity.
You take matters in your own hands.
Yeah, absolutely. And things like, you know, don't look in the camera and don't laugh at your own jokes and don't laugh at other people's jokes and, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
And so it definitely was a lot of fun, you know, but it was on the job training because I'd never done a series before.
And by that point, you moved to Los Angeles?
Yeah.
So what was that transition like? Because the 70s, I mean, a lot of people don't even realize that for a lot of African Americans, like, you know, we've only known the current environment that we're in right now for mm-hmm. just 50 years. So I'll say for at least the first 10 years, I'm sure that it was a learning curve for anyone in Hollywood
mm-hmm.
in the 70s.
Sure.
Kind of trekking uncharted territory that wasn't previously available to them any decades or time before. So what was it like coming, like, what were your memories of moving to L.A. like?
Well, I went to school back at PS92. I went to school that morning, and when I came back to our apartment, the little few things that we had, including, like, my little Easy Bake Oven and, you know, those sort of, like, everything, my ViewMaster, everything was packed up. It wasn't a whole lot. And my mom said, we're moving to L.A. tonight. And I was like,
without
oh,
warning,
okay.
Nothing?
No, just because we hadn't, I just went to school like any other day.
So why did y'all end up moving to L.A.? So
Mom had been there when she toured with Hello Dolly, and she just felt like that area had more opportunities work-wise. Harlem in the early to mid-70s was a lot different than it is now. Mm-hmm. And so Mom just thought that that was going to be a better look for Thank us. And so she you know, packed us up, and we went out there. One of the other persons who was a part of the acting troupe that Al Fan had was Lawrence Hilton Jacobs.
Oh.
And him and my mom were like brother and sister. And so when we came out to L.A., he was like, you know, Chip, I got you, and I got Kimmy, and, you know, whatever you guys need. And so what you're talking about right there, you know, that there was really no blueprint. Mm-hmm. And everybody just kind of, you know, that village holding it together and
he
figuring
was your green
it
book.
Out. Yeah, exactly.
Your guy. Exactly.
Yeah, because he had gone out there and booked Welcome Back, Kotter.
Mm-hmm.
And so he knew kind of the ropes. But it was still different for, you know, a female and a female with a little kid. And so we moved and got an apartment eventually in West Hollywood. And then Mom started working. Then I started working.
How does that work? That's what I was wondering, because I'm like, you guys are both working actors.
Yeah.
Of course, her more than you.
Right, right.
But how does she do that? How is she mom and agent manager and
right.
then her own career?
Right. Well, she was never
she was
agent
manager.
I meant for her. I just meant, okay.
So she wasn't a momager?
No, she was
not a
momager. She was mom, and it stopped right there.
Okay.
And one thing I always, to this day, I marvel at, like Mom had me when she was 18. Mm. And you know, it's like she's such a good parent, but she knew nothing about parenting. She was a kid herself. And, you know, just how did she know the stuff to teach me and to pour into me and to know things like, hey, she is not my competition. She's my child.
Right, right, right.
especially when we are, you know, both at, you know, at some point we both began working. My Aunt Pat, my mother's sister, was an integral part of all of this. Mom asked her to come out and to move to L.A. And so my Aunt Pat was actually the one who was on set with me all the time I was working up till I was 18. She would travel with me to all my appearances and everything. Wow.
Man, so it's, I guess you can say that, well, that's weird because I always thought she was your manager. So, but that's mm-hmm. good that she had the insight at least to to
put some distance.
No distance, because most parents don't do that. Like they either live their dreams through their kids or.
Yeah, and she was not that, you know. And she also she never stopped parenting me, even though she was finding her way as a parent. You know, one time I had said it was like maybe the second or third season of Living Single, Facts of Life, and she had raised me to be a really good kid. Like, don't talk back, be very disrespectful. You know, I had home training, and she said to me one day, "Kimmy, clean up your room," and I promise y'all, I was not trying to be smart. It was a genuine question when I said, "Isn't that what we have a housekeeper for?"
Oh, no, you didn't. Oh.
And I really wasn't trying to be
like Randy Jackson's episode all over again.
Nothing I can love. And then sure enough, before I could finish, I got popped in my mouth.
That was my next question. I wanted to know if you was a whooping baby. Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Now, I wasn't a whooping baby because I was a good kid.
Okay.
But she popped me in my mouth. Because
in your book, you're telling about a situation when you were on set and you had to talk back to a parent and you weren't really sure how to do that.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I had to talk back to Mrs. Garrett on the Jermaine Jackson episode. And my mom was like, no, it's okay. You can do this now. Here, this is fine. But she knew, I mean, you know, I wasn't talking back, but it was just that sense of you're not going to be that child.
Right.
You know, and then she called, then to top it off, girl, she called the studio and talked to one of the producers and said, "I'm sorry, but Kim won't be returning as Tootie any longer. She doesn't know how to deal with this." Oh, and
what?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When was this? Whoa. What season?
I love it. Yeah, that's something my mama would have done.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, him being a parent was right there with her and said, "Okay, Chip, no problem. We understand. Tell her thank you so much for her time and everything." And of course, they were dealing with they were parenting me to make sure that I didn't start tripping at age, you know, 11 or 12 or whatever it was. And I was like, "Oh, my bad. I didn't know. Oh, no problem. I got it. My socks, got it. My toys, I'll put these away." You know, and that sort of thing.
So you still were a kid.
Absolutely.
I always wondered, like, What's the power dynamic where you're an established person at your job, but you still got to come home and take the garbage out?
That's right. Yeah. Well, it keeps you grounded. I mean, think about when the Obamas won and Michelle was like, "But you're still taking the babies to school in the morning. I know you just became president, right. but you're still going to take your babies to school." I mean, there's certain things that, you know, conceptually, no matter if it's fame or whatever it is, being connected to some form of groundedness has to be in play. Otherwise, you turn up effing crazy.
When Randy Jackson was on the show.
Which one?
Randy. Not dog.
Got it. Okay.
No, and he was saying that they had just did four sold out nights at the Forum and got home back to Encino. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
I
mom's
was
like,
"You was there.
I was there.
It's your turn. You didn't take the garbage out." And he's like, "Well, I just played a sold out concert at." And then Joe's like, "What'd you say? Okay, sir."
Right.
What was the.
By the way, I mean, Randy Jackson was that was everything. He was everything to me. That
really?
Was my crush. Yes. Oh my God. When they let him sing on "Can You Feel It," that was it right there. My world was lit. Randy! I was the only one in the Forum screaming like a banshee.
As a working actor, what was the Hollywood Shuffle process like?
I love when you ask that question that way. I love it.
No, dude, it's like,
real.
Yeah, like, what was the process like? Now, of course, you were lucky enough to land key, memorable roles in your career, but on an average, could you talk about the audition process?
Oh yeah.
Like, even as an established act, like, did you still have to?
Absolutely. You still had to audition. And it was there was a big part of it that was almost like family reunion. Because you go in, hey, Tisha, hey, Jada, hey, Vivica, you know, and it's like kind of the, you know, because at that time, it was, you know, just a handful of roles, and we were all going out for them, you know, and some of them you knew, oh, yeah, this one's got, oh, yeah, this is going to be yours, and, you know, that sort of thing.
Well, what was it like in your younger years? Like, were you still going after commercials and...
Sure, I'd still audition, but not as much. Number one, when you're on a series, and see, you have to remember in that day and age of television, so to speak, a season was 24 episodes. So you were busy for a much longer period of time than, you know, nowadays where it's like, oh, there's 6 episodes, there's 8 episodes. Right. So, you know, then you were doing TV movies. So I would do like the ones I did with Gary Coleman and that sort of thing. And at that point, I didn't have to audition. You know, Children of Divorce or the ones with Gary Coleman, I didn't have to audition for those.
Was there ever, did you feel like a feeling of secureness, like, okay, we got through this year. Was there always like a midpoint season where are you checking the Nielsen ratings every 12 seconds?
Too young. I was too young. I was really just into, again, make sure I had good grades, make sure I was professional, make sure I was a good kid. And so my priorities were not about that part of the industry because I was too young to really focus on that. And the things that I did that were important to me, aside from the kids stuff, I really enjoyed being around the crew and learning from them. You know, it's like a kid being around musicians and they love music. You're just going to keep gravitating towards them every chance you get. And so that was really, you know, my lane right there.
Here's a backslide question I have. I remember when it first came on the air, there was a larger ensemble cast.
A lot of
and
girls.
And then it was just whittled down to the four of you. Mm-hmm. What was the thought process or, like, what made that transition happen? Because at one point, like, Molly Ringwald was a part of the cast.
It was a bigger house. Remember that?
Yeah, way
it was,
bigger. Yeah. I mean, now it's like when you watch television, you got to watch every episode and binge watch every second of it. Mm-hmm. Whereas back then, it's just like, oh, it's on. But
right.
I never understood what was the decision factor behind turning a 7 cast.
People to pay?
Don't think it was quite that. But basically, we had a half-hour show. Right. And it's a lot of characters to service in a half hour. And so after we did that first season, the network execs evaluated it and felt that there were just too many people to try to focus on in 22 minutes. And so then it became, okay, well, what if we change some of the dynamics, you know, changing the amount of people that are there. You mentioned it being a bigger house. So that main set was more like the common area, or the commons or something like that. And so then they shifted it to something that, you know, they felt they had more storyline ideas. So the idea of the idea of like the cafeteria where you could still have all the kids coming and going, but it still was more interesting than just having the common area and us living above it. So that was the idea. Now that was one of the few times where I remembered thinking, I'm gonna probably get cut too because I'm the black kid and black people always get cut first. That was like one of the first times I really had a... Well, that was a horror movie to me. That people get cut off the show.
You guys knew that the guillotine button was about to be pressed and somebody was leaving?
Not quite like that. You know, when we heard that there was a pickup and everybody was, you know, ecstatic and then they said, yes, the show's been picked up, but there have been some changes that have been made. These girls are not coming back to the show. You're going to come back. This one's coming back.
How was the news broken? Like in front of...
On the phone.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
On the phone, yeah.
So you were waiting for a phone call and you didn't know?
Yeah.
Yikes.
That's the facts of life for real.
So you always knew you was the lone black girl in the room?
No, not like that.
Okay, I was
that
wondering.
Was one of the few times. That's why I said it was one of the few times where I really registered the idea of being the black girl or being the black person. Mm-hmm.
And that's early
other
on.
Than that, and that was very early on. Yeah. But for the most part, it one, I wasn't taught to look through, you know, the lens with color. Mm-hmm. Everybody was just people.
But you was looking to get fired first because you was the black girl.
Not fired, just not invited back.
Exactly. Sorry. Been there.
But in retrospect...
Yes.
In retrospect, though, or in hindsight, mm-hmm. you being a first, living a life of being a first or whatever, what was the environment like on the set?
It was great.
Really?
It really was great. Everybody was, it was a level playing field, truly.
Okay.
Truly. Like, even as the youngest, I didn't feel like the baby, you know? Like, Tootie felt that more than Kim did.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Oh, good, because I didn't have nothing else.
Because they
to
baby
tell you.
Tootie. Yeah.
That's all I had.
What was the average work day like?
Well, as a minor, you can only work, you know, a certain number of hours a day, and then you also have to go to school. So we would go to school in the morning, and by the second season, when Nancy arrived, Nancy and I were in studio school together. Mindy, her family wanted her to stay in her school environment, and so she would come to work after. Lisa was already, what do you call it? She had taken the proficiency test or whatever, so she wasn't in school anymore, even though she was 16. And that's also really a huge contributing factor to why Nancy and I are so close and were so close, even though Tootie and Joe were not. Nancy and I are, oh my gosh, super,
I just thought it was you
tight.
And Mindy. In my mind, it's always been
exactly,
you and Mindy.
Exactly, because
right.
that's
because
how
that's
the show
the
was.
Yeah.
But I spent actually more time, far more time than with Nancy, because you're in studio school. And so you start roughly about 2 hours before everybody even comes to work.
I was going to say, take us through studio school. I always wanted to know what, like, being tutored on the set was like.
Yeah, so you're in, you know, like, one of the rooms in the production office. When we filmed for 3 seasons at Universal Studios, we were in a row of trailers. So there was Facts of Life, Different Strokes, One Day at a Time, Silver Spoons. We were all in this hall. Not together, but we were just in a row of trailers that, you know, were separated by a door. But we were all right there.
But Recess must have been amazing.
Yo, I'm like, don't unleash 8-year-old me over there because I would have had so much fun.
No.
It's like
my
best friends.
It was great.
It was all the same teachers or different
packs? Each show has a different teacher.
Oh.
Depending on you know, if the grade levels of the kids, if there are multiple kids on a show, you might have different tutors to cover different ages. But Nancy and I had the same tutor, Margaret, God rest her soul. Margaret was our tutor for the whole time. And so, you know, you go and you have 2 hours of school. Then when everybody comes to work, you literally, man, are ping pong back and forth between school and rehearsal. Until you've done enough hours in the day, because you have to be in school for 3 hours a day. And then you can be in the rehearsal hall or filming full time. Now, what they end up doing is, like, if you're on a hiatus week, those are tough. Because there's no outlet. You're there and you go to school and then you have to what you call bank time. So you might be there for like 5 hours doing school, because when you're in production on your filming day, you might only get 20 minutes of schooling, which is the minimum that you have to be there. And then they pull from your hours in the bank so that you still have your time.
Someone is there literally clocking, like a union person, like...
Baby, we used to have booth time and Margaret time. And Margaret, if it was... Booth time was like in the control room,
right,
where the producers would go, okay, we're going to lose Kim in 5 minutes. We have to get this scene done, or, you know, that sort of thing. And Margaret time was, y'all have to finish now. I don't know. That clock's not right. My clock says it's 9 o'clock now, and so you've got to pull the plug.
Are they still doing that system today, or is that was it? Were they
to
more
a certain
hard
extent,
back then?
I mean, to a certain extent, you know, because the labor laws, they got such a bad rap from, you know, earlier generations, so they tried to be better at it. But when our son Quincy was in the Pride and Prejudice movie for a Lifetime this past summer, he filmed it at the end of last year.
Right.
And I was set mom, and I was in the trailer, ooh, and, you know, there was his tutor and all those things. And I actually took video and showed it to Nancy. I was like, oh, my God, your
freaky
nephew's in studio school right now.
Are they all aunts? Are they all aunties?
Oh, absolutely.
I love it. I love
absolutely.
It.
No, I was asking because during like, I just never understood and always sort of frowned. And, all right, first of all, yes, I can admit that, you know, I'm very bad at punctuality and time and all that stuff.
Really? So
I'm working on myself, Boss Bill. You know this. So when working on Hamilton, I didn't realize that they are also very anal retentive with time. So, like, there was always a on-set person with a stopwatch.
Yeah.
And say if, like, George Washington had to re-sing a part over again, it's like, okay, well, we have 6 minutes and 30 seconds, guys, until now it's 5 minutes and 50 seconds. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, look.
This is for working the cast album?
Yeah, because okay. They're also and, you know, there's, like, actual people whose jobs it is just to look at the stopwatch.
Yeah, absolutely.
And enforce rules.
Yeah.
Of which, as a black person, I'm like,
I don't know what you're talking about.
But the unions are, to your point, really, you know, they are there to really protect the artists is what, you know, the idea of the union is. And so being able to protect, making sure that you know, you're not overworked and all of those things. So they are sticklers.
So does that leave you enough time to actually study your lines? Or are you guys just given sides and you recap them for 2 seconds and...
Right. So when you're doing a movie, then, you know, you shoot bits of it every day. But on a multi-camera comedy like that, then you film just kind of once or twice a week. So you have the script and you rehearse the whole thing over and over and over.
Okay. So as a teenager, let's push on in the years. Mm-hmm. no, I'm trying to cover every aspect of your career. Was there a general fear of Hollywood trappings that have sort of grabbed everyone? You seem to, at least in my eyes, you got out of it unscathed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, without a scratch or I don't know. But, like, how hard was that to avoid in such a decadent time period as the late 80s? Yeah, into
no
early
social
90s.
Media.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It was there was a part of it that was really easy because I was scared, meaning I was that kid that was like, I don't even want to try weed because I'd be that one person that they find out, oh, my God, it can kill you if you puff once. We didn't know, and now God rest her soul, you know. So I was like,
I always thought my parents were going to beat my ass for that, so I just never did it.
So, you know, it's like, I'm not going to try that, and certainly not anything stronger than that. Mm-mm. But basically, I just felt like I didn't want to be a has-been at 18. I clearly remember having that thought, you know, as you get 15 and 16 and you know, you're just becoming a young adult. And I remember thinking, I'm not going to be a has-been at 18. And I'm not going to let my village suffer because I'm a statistic. My village has put way too much in me for me to go out like that. That's not an option. So that's how I avoid it. I'm not unscratched, not at all. It's just I didn't have some of those monumental, tragic incidents, you know, that sort of thing. But I certainly had struggles and challenges. That's why I start my book with the piece from Langston Hughes. Well, son, I'll tell you, life for me ain't been no crystal stair. Because people think, they look at me and they go, oh, she ain't been through nothing. Psh, what?
You was a first. How could you not go through something?
Even if I wasn't.
Even if you even wasn't, if you are somebody. Right, right.
Exactly.
It's a whole woman. You're exactly. A whole black woman. You're a whole this. You're a whole. I get it.
I think Margaret finally found a friend over here. First friend in the show. Kim
That's
feels
my first
lazy
name too, Margaret.
So, got it. Yeah. Got it.
She been my friend. She just didn't know.
How important, but how hard was it to shake the T word?
I love you for that, man.
once the series ended, what, 86, 80, I believe? 89.
No, 88. 88. 79 to 88, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, by the way, everybody remembers the first show they ever recorded when they got a VCR. So I got my box open right in time for the El DeBarge episode of
Which song was
Facts
that?
Of Life.
Didn't they go to the studio? Y'all went to the studio, right?
Because you wear it well.
I forgot. We talked about this when Saida was on our show.
That's right.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so it's first, like back when you, in the 80s, when you got a VCR, you recorded any and everything because you were like, you know, you didn't want to miss anything. So,
oh, we used to have like mountains of VHS tapes. It was like, this is the Saturday lineup pile. This is the Thursday lineup pile.
Do you ever
that
go back?
That is so funny. You know, Maxwell just sent me a text of a picture of like just piles, like piles of VHS and cassettes. And he's like, I got mine. You know, you got yours. That is so funny. Oh my God.
But if you think about it, we are like, as a species, we're the most documenting, never going back to watch people.
True.
Like the amount. Oh, wait, that's from Maxwell?
Yes.
Wait, with a floppy disk? Yo, him and D'Angelo do have stuff in common.
Those were the best cassette tapes, the see-through ones with the color. Right. Yes. Oh, my God.
Anyway, sorry.
Kim just showed us her phone, and Maxwell sent her a photo of a bunch of VHS, a cassette, and a floppy disk, which reminds me that to this day, D'Angelo still creates his music on his ASR-10 and needs floppy disks to make it sound.
Wow.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to throw you under the bus.
He just said again, it's cool.
But my point being that when the series was over, how hard was it to shake the character as far as figuring out what you're going to do next?
Well, thankfully, the character had grown up. So, you know, I wasn't like a Shirley Temple type of child star trapped in, you know, being a child.
Right.
And I had gone to college and, you know, I'd gotten my degree. So I'd stayed busy, number one. So my mind wasn't idle and I wasn't just kind of trapped my own self.
What did you major in at Pepperdine?
I double majored in broadcast journalism and TV and film production, and I minored in religion.
Why'd you choose Pepperdine?
I wanted to go to San Diego State, but I couldn't go out of state for school or out of town for school because Facts of Life was still. Did you wear that for me?
Oh, your crown that you got on your head.
It says facts.
Oh, crap. No, not even. Shout out to Dee and Ricky. I do this weird thing when I meditate in the morning and it was like the first word I saw, so.
Wow.
Okay.
I did facts. Right. And then when I grab a whole bunch of letters and whatever comes out of my hand, I was just like, oh, I'll use that. I swear to God.
That's next level meditation.
And again, like, I did
but
not know I was wearing a crown or.
What, but look how connected we are that I permeated your meditation time.
See?
And you had me on your mind.
Wow.
I don't think you ever left.
Why you can tell you that? I don't even read the calendar in the morning. I was like, oh, boy, I'm going to work, right? Oh, Kim. No, I'm playing.
Although he's been asking me almost once a week. So when is Kim? Did you get Kim? Did she come?
We're laughing because it's true.
Yeah, sadly true.
How do you decide which crown to wear each day?
He has different ones, crown? Steve?
I don't know.
Steve's being Steve. All right. Anyway, no, I totally forgot I was wearing a crown on my head. I'm sorry.
No, I interrupted you. What were you saying?
No, about Pepperdine.
Yeah, why'd you?
Yes. So I wanted to go out of state, and I couldn't go out of state, and then I couldn't even go out of town because Facts of Life was still filming when I started college because I took 7th and 8th grade together. So I got out of high school a year early, so I was still doing Facts of Life when I started college. And so we had done the Australia movie, and then I started school.
Well, this was fun. I remember the Paris one.
Yes.
I was on punishment for the other one.
You remember Paris.
Wait a minute. Weren't we older? How was you on punishment then?
When y'all went to Paris, I remember being in trouble. That Paris was like, what, 80?
I was 12.
Right?
I was 12. 84.
Two of those special Facts of Life trips I was on punishment for. So
okay, the other one I was 17, 18. I don't even want to know why you was.
No, my bad. Y'all went to Hawaii.
Everybody went to Hawaii.
We didn't do Hawaii.
I'm about to say Jeffersons
went to Hawaii.
For a long time.
And you saw they took the hairdresser because, baby, that feathers was whipped.
Yes! Wait. Okay, we're
here's something weird. Okay, so
Don't say his name.
Apollonia. Okay. No, we won't yet. We will in a second.
Okay.
So Apollonia and I have a really good mutual friend in Shep Gordon who lives in Maui. Uh-huh. And one of Apple's favorite things is to, when you go to the thrift stores to
antiquing?
Get antiquing. Right. And somehow Apollonia wound up with Roxy Roker's Polaroid scrapbook. Ooh, of when the Jeffersons went to Hawaii.
Oh my goodness.
How much did she pay for that?
No, she just like always had it. And that's how I introduced her to Lenny and Zoe to get the book back. So she's had it for all the time.
I know Miss Roxy's hair was straight in Hawaii.
Feathered.
So on those special episodes, you guys were allowed special amenities for your...
Well, facts of life, I wasn't. And that's why when that wind blew, Tootie's bangs looked like all to be damned. And my mother was like, oh, never again. That's the one time she was kind of managerish and was like, my baby will not be looking like that if you guys go anywhere else.
Did they have a hairdresser for you?
Yes.
On set? Like a... Well,
Joanne Stafford Chaney, okay. Baby. All that's right. Who created the zigzag part. That's... Look at you.
Wait, what? Wait, she's an Emmy winner.
That's right.
She is?
Heat of the Night, right? Did she win an Emmy for that?
Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm.
Wait, how do you know that?
I read the book, and then I did Google afterwards.
Oh, okay. I was about to say, because you pioneered, for me, like, even though people now are sort of crediting, like, Salt and Pepper for the mushroomish...
Oh, yeah, no, she had it.
No,
Joanne,
no,
like,
no.
I felt like you were the pioneer.
You mean the...
Yes.
Oh, what's that called?
The page boy. The page boy, the
mushroom.
That's a page boy? I thought that was
in
Halle Berry.
In some circle.
Huh? I thought the Halle Berry cut was a page boy, right? No?
Well, you're talking Living Single. I'm talking about her Facts of Life.
That's what I'm talking about, yeah.
The mushroom. Mushroom. Right, oh, okay. Right, yes. And, I mean, I had bangs, that big barrel on the curling irons. So, yeah, but the zigzag part... Picked out all of my styles was Joanne, but they didn't take Joanne to Paris. And old Kim suffered.
Wait, last hair question.
It's good to know that, see, when we go away on location and I have to beg and plead, like, yo, this afro don't come out. Like,
what? Let me tell
you. Afro
is
switch. Just as much a character
That's
on the
right.
show as I am.
That's right. And then when we went to Australia... Kim was late though. Kim had her hair tight on that one, but I took my hairstylist.
Was that was you a relaxer or was that a blowout? I'm sorry, I just always had that question.
No,
press it on.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I felt like
it took a while. Or did you ever get your hair chemical a perm?
I don't think so.
I didn't
have to
think
ask
so
my mom.
Either. Yeah.
I have to ask my mom that.
That was good to watch.
Yep.
I was like, okay.
Yep.
Just don't let the rain
that wooden
come down.
Spoon on my ear, that's what I really remember.
And the blue grease.
No, because it's stank. Oh, okay. And now back to our regularly scheduled conversation.
No, believe me, we are the rabbit hole kings on this show.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
good.
Yeah, yeah.
So as I was mentioning earlier, and I know that people seem to think I'm talking out the side of my neck, but not many people know that the reasons that Friends exist is because the creators of Friends, my great pals at NBC, where I currently work to this day. I love my job and benefits.
It's coming. I'm waiting. Okay, come on.
No, well, you know, I thought it was Brandon Tartikoff's last move. He had a chance to have Living Single on NBC, but they were like, well, we have enough black shows already. We already have LaBelle's Up All Night. And we have the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and we have Ella's in the House. So maybe three's enough, you know. And we still have Cosby in A Different World, so that's a lot of blackness, so we'll pass on this one. Okay. And he was like, I don't know, there's something about this show and the chemistry they have. And I guess the decision was, well, let's create the white version of Living Single. And thus, that's how Friends came to be.
Is that correct?
I did not know that. Would you say
it is? Is oh no no.
I'm asking
Brandon.
I'm asking Kim.
If
that sounds familiar. Ahead,
no, say no, that no, again. Finish. He said it. He admitted it.
Yeah. Oh, it's fact.
Why are you saying you're going to jump in the grave and get him?
Oh, is he in the grave?
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
My bad.
I didn't know that he.
My bad.
Wait, yeah, Tartikoff died.
He's been dead for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, Joanne won the Emmys and Tartikoff.
No, I knew Joanne won the Emmy because I read the book and then I did Google afterwards. Tartikoff. I actually remember when he died.
Yeah.
I actually remember when he died. I was like probably like 11 or 12, but I remember that shit.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Well, that's...
That's why I'm surprised to have Tartikoff connected to Friends.
Well, and it's... even living single. Whoever was the president of NBC in 92, 93 mm-hmm. admitted it on, like, one of those, like, panel things. Yes.
I'm getting and on
thus,
Google right now.
And thus, the reason why Jay-Z made... the Moonlight video, with all the Black Friends characters.
I didn't know he was that. Okay, didn't know that.
You didn't know that Jay-Z was deep.
I didn't say that. I just didn't know that he was up on his pop culture trivia like that. I didn't know he was deep because
it's quasi common knowledge. But were you aware of those facts at all?
Not those particular facts.
Okay.
Other facts. What I know is that. Yvette created this brilliant show, and Yvette had a deal with Fox to develop a show with Dana and Kim Coles, mm-hmm. Latifa and Kim Coles. I don't know what the preamble was prior to that. What was difficult, you know, and a bit of a challenge to work through sometimes was that both Friends and Living Single was Warner Brothers.
Right.
And so, you know, oftentimes, real talk, we kind of felt like the...
I'm sorry. I love that Bill is
I'm still looking it up.
Diligently looking it up.
Like, I want you to be right.
I'm partly insulted as I'm listening to you. Like, yeah, go continue. I'm like, motherfucker, you still looking this up? Can I just have this, please? All right, go ahead, Kim. I'm sorry.
So sometimes we kind of felt like the redheaded stepchild, you
right,
know.
Like I do right now.
From the standpoint of we were, you know, quote unquote, first.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're able to inspire people to create great content, great. What do they say? You know, something is the highest form of flattery.
Imitation.
That's it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He came with that quick. He didn't have to Google that. But being able to, you know, when my kids wake up from nightmares, the first thing I say is, what's your truth? Speak your truth. Know your truth. And we know our truth, bottom line. So mm-hmm. we don't have to have anybody validate it and memes about it and start a hashtag campaign.
And we used to see people starting shit and people copying.
So well, there's that. There's that part. But at the end of the day, that's the part that was the most frustrating, you know, to be a part of the same production, the same studio, essentially,
mm-hmm.
And to be treated so grossly different in terms of pay, mm-hmm. in terms of... You know, this is a true story. One day we came to work and the soundstage was freezing. And even things like, you know where the big Warner Brothers is, the main Warner Brothers lot.
Yeah.
And then they have the ranch.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you think filmed at the main lot and who do you think filmed at the ranch?
The ranch was the better option or not the better option?
Oh, no. The ranch was, you know, kind of that
out the way.
The ranch is not the big studio.
You guys were at the ranch, weren't
you? That's right. That's right. So we came in there, and the soundstage was freezing. They said that they weren't going to turn the lights on. And so we had to rehearse in these big, big puffer coats and stuff because they were saying that they didn't want to spend the money to turn the lights on and or heat. And that's when we actually, that was the one and only time that we collectively said, we're not coming to work. We're not going to do that. Because at this point, this is a safety hazard.
How cheap and do you have to be?
meanwhile, the other folks walk off to get $1 million per episode.
Yes.
Right.
You know, and it's like, they want money, we want heat. If that don't sound like an episode of Good Times.
You was a whole Black woman in that moment. Right. You know what I'm saying? Not even the seven, not like the 70 cent, but the 65.
Right, you know? And so you have those moments where it's like, never mind all the other stuff that goes around the comparisons. Those are the moments where it's like, that was some bullshit.
Can you ask them, just real quick, I just want to know, since you knew this, right, my question is, because usually on the opposite side, the other people have no idea. The other folks are going through.
Absolutely.
So was it the same way?
I don't know. I never met them.
You never ran into them?
Nope.
So they probably
weren't at the lot.
Joey.
So we didn't run into them in the commissary.
So somebody told them, you know your show is based off this show called Living Single. They'd be like, what the fuck? No, you're in.
What's a Living Single?
<What's> a living single?
Well, okay, I know that they're... there have been a few times on these episodes that you directed.
Yes.
And often, like when I watch sitcoms, like a key character will go away for a vacation. And
right.
then they'll.
right.
Like, where is she this week? Oh, she went on a convention and be like, directed by Kim Fields.
Right.
right. How is that negotiated? And how hard is it to direct? And really, the real question is, how come characters have to leave to go on vacation
right.
to direct their own thing? Like, why can't you also be there at the same time?
Right. You know what's funny is I remember when Anson Williams and Ron Howard and those guys started directing, like, Happy Days. And you'd see, like you just said, you know, Podsy's going off to just such and such.
Right.
Because he was directing. Regine didn't go anywhere. Regine, but the first time I directed an episode of Living Single, I was the B story. And I was like, wait a minute, what happened to the rules? What? I'm directing and I'm the B story. Wait. And really, they try to do that because it's a lot to direct an episode, and then you've got to put yourself in it, you know, and then you've got to have your stand-in to be you, and then when you're in it, then you have to make sure that the assistant director or stage manager is watching. So it's just it's a lot instead of just being in one scene and then you go away and then you can really focus on that, you know. And for the type of sitcom that we were doing, this was when they would have a control room. And so you'd actually leave the soundstage, go to another part of the building to, you know, where basically master control was, where you're talking to the cameras and all, just everybody, and all the monitors are there and you're switching shots and things like that.
So you had to determine that as well.
Yeah.
So it's a big, giant division of labor.
Absolutely.
Which makes Tyler Perry look even more genius in his way, I guess, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. I know, but it does.
Yes. Yeah,
you can't take it away.
You didn't have to defend it. Sorry. I agree with you.
Oh, sorry.
We're pro Tyler.
Okay.
You know, he's making power moves. Yes, Steve?
Clearing my throat.
Anyway. In hindsight, what lessons or valuable lessons have you learned in your career that you wish you knew then at that particular time period, or you're fine with
right
your outcome? And
yeah,
I feel like everything happens for a reason.
Yeah,
and so even now, like, I'll see someone that has done better than me in my career, or whatever, and like maybe at that moment I'll be like, oh man, I wish I wrote that song or something like that. But then.
Right.
I feel like I'm on the path I'm supposed to be on.
Exactly.
But if there's something, like, okay, I wish I knew about, like, okay, this is some real, Laish about the.
No, I'm not. Go ahead. Safe space.
I've known you for all my life.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
I'd really wish I had gotten early in the game on, like, stocks and investments.
Mm-hmm.
Way earlier in my career.
Sure.
I'm on it now.
We all do, Amir. Shoot. Yeah.
But, you know. Had I known then what I know now,
yeah.
You know, I wouldn't have laughed at Ashton Kutcher or like, what's an
right,
Uber?
Right.
Anyway, get out of here. Like, that sort of thing.
Oh.
But, like, what things do you wish you'd...
I wish I hadn't worn braces so long because fucking overbites are sexy now.
What
the hell?
Where?
Wait,
like,
who?
Like, Liv Tyler, I mean, you know, just like, isn't that like a thing?
But
like,
not her daddy. He's got one too.
But I didn't bring him up.
You're right, you sure didn't. You didn't.
I didn't say him.
You didn't. Kim, since we talk about physical things, can I ask you a question that I read? And I'm so curious, just as a woman, a bountiful, plentiful woman.
Yes.
Why did you have to get two reductions? And I know one of them was covered on Living Single, but
yes,
I'm scared for myself.
Well, the first one was just physically. I was 5 feet tall, and so just I'm still am, but I had a lot of back issues with that.
You're 5 feet?
Yes. Look at the pictures of us together. Look how, like, I mean, just.
Oh. In my mind, you're like, 5'5".
She's because she's huge.
Because
she's huge.
And I always wear heels when I'm going to your shows.
Sneakers. Okay,
yes,
I see now. Okay,
exactly.
Okay.
Like,
yes.
Prince, you're big on, it's just something big about you. But go ahead.
I'm a guy. I'm dumb. Sorry.
But the second one was for aesthetics. I just felt like, I'm just, you know, being on camera so much. Mm-hmm. And I just wasn't pleased. But, you know, but I mean, the procedures have come such a long way. Don't be scared. If that's what you want to do, go for it.
No, well,
and
yeah.
If it ain't what you want to do, then don't do it.
Yeah. I thought about it. I mean, it's funny because guys go, well, why would you do that? But we all know sometimes you just want to wear one sports bra. Or sometimes you just want to run. Or sometimes you just want to stand straight and, you know, have your shoulders down. It's hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
I was answering the questions because, you know.
Because you know I was asking in my
yes,
head.
Yes, you were.
Wait, it just hit me. You, on your Instagram, you put up a photo that kind of blew my mind.
Yes.
And it's you at Westlake Studios.
Yes.
Casually visiting Michael Jackson while recording Thriller.
Wow.
During the PYT background vocal sessions.
Yes.
Was that just like... just like a regular Tuesday. I'm a,
just about. Just about.
Let me go by. Hey, what are you guys doing? Oh, that's nice.
So Janet, it was one of the times when she was on Different Strokes.
Mm-hmm.
And this was, yeah. And she had asked Mindy and I, because again, Different Strokes, Facts of Life, we all filmed in the same, right there in the same areas.
Okay.
And so she asked us if we wanted to hang out and go to the studio because Michael was recording. Sure.
Oh,
and so
wow.
We show up and he was recording, like you said, the backgrounds for PYT. And James was there and Mr. Jones was there and
James
Ingram. LaToya was there.
LaToya, Janet,
Bunny Hall.
Hall and Stephanie Spruill. Yeah.
Yes. So they were all there, and they were like, "Hey, you know, we're at this part where we're doing the call and response, and the PYT say, no, 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 I want you guys all get in there." Okay. So we all go in the studio, and we do the
all six of you.
Yes.
Wow.
And we do the na na nas, and Mr. Jones hits the button. I hear an anchovy. Never forget. I hear an anchovy. And so we all was in there. Was like, everybody come on out. Just come on out. And then it became like, you know, being picked for a sport at school. Okay, you, and you go back in. The rest of you stay here.
And you were we'll take the in girl. The outside.
I was in the outside looking in.
We'll take the girl. You guys take Amir. Right. I know that feeling.
Yeah.
Softball.
Yeah.
What am I going to do? You be team manager, man. Ah, damn.
That's funny. I was team manager of our baseball team at Burbank High.
Really?
Yeah. But I'm sure it's not funny because of what you were just... Oh. My bad.
No, it's funny. It's funny. It's funny.
I'm still here, man.
It's funny.
I'm still here.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure Grant Woods could see me now. He'd regret. He'd regret.
Call him out.
Wow. I was a good
Walter.
First baseman. I know the sports, right, Steve?
I understand.
Heavy lies
we're
the crown.
Calling out childhood bullies? All right, Shane.
See there?
Yeah, Avian. What we doing?
Wait, no, we're not calling out childhood bullies.
Okay. I'm sorry. I started that. I'm sorry.
My bad. She was littler than me.
Any other casual flexes like that? No, yeah, we should all be scared of anyone smaller than us.
Yeah.
Like bigger dudes, I'm like, whatever. But small people, they have something to prove.
Certainly.
Any other casual flexes that you've had in your life?
So far, no.
Like at a red light and like, oh, yeah, here's Prince in his Cadillac. Just something casual.
You know, when Johnny Gill and I met, it was in the Glendale Galleria. And we've been friends ever since. And I just did a promotional thing for my Christmas movie there. And they were like, you grew up in this area. Do you have any special memories? And I'm like, you know what? I met Johnny Gill here. And they
really?
Were like, oh, my God. And then he and I texted each other and joked about it.
John is everywhere.
Yes.
He's Uncle Johnny.
Oh, so this
John R.
And this time you are directing and starring at the
yeah,
same
I was
time.
This one
I'm
I didn't
sorry.
Direct. I EP'd it. But
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yes.
So what has this whole experience been like doing the Christmas movie? And
oh, my goodness.
You've done several.
And how did you
yes.
orchestrate this?
Well, with this one, You Light Up My Christmas, Lifetime and I have been in development for a couple of projects for a while now. And then they said, we really want you on the air this year. Just bottom line. And that really meant a lot to me to have a network executive say that after this many decades, you know, in the game.
Right.
And to top it off, and we want you to be the leading lady. You're the star. And, you know, you're not the friend, you're not the boss, you're not the sister, you're not. And so that just really just did something for me. Of course it would. And so they said, we have a script. We have this writer that we really like. She's got this script. If you like it, let's put you in pre-production and go. And so I read it, and I loved it. We made some tweaks to it, and they said, great, go up to Vancouver. Here you go. And we had just this amazing 6 weeks up there, 15 days in production. And we have this beautiful, amazing movie called You Light Up My Christmas.
Wait, 15 days in production, but 6 weeks to edit, shoot, or?
Yeah, so there was pre-production, you know, where you are casting and location shooting and wardrobe and designing the characters and all that. And then by the time they saw the dailies, bits of, you know, the things that we had been filming, they said, oh, we love this. We're moving your production, your air date up 2 weeks.
Okay.
To December 1st, so the Sunday after Thanksgiving.
How was it being back with your cohorts and
It was fun. You know, it's not like we haven't been together since, you know, 88. I mean, we certainly, we're sisters, and so we've seen each other over the years. Our children know each other. You know, again, we're all, you know.
Is there a chat thread?
Yes, there is, but the Living Single one is better.
Oh my God. How proud are you of Erica Alexander? She's really been killing it. I just had to say that while you were
she's
here.
Great.
Oh,
she's
my
amazing.
God.
Oh, it's Mrs. Mom.
Not just that, but she's been doing a lot of dramatic roles.
Listen,
that
Erica
like,
Alexander has been my hero for a long time, and then she's like, oh, Kim Fields, please be quiet. Yeah. She calls me Little Fields because she's, you know, much taller than me. But
like my mind
Erica
is kind
went to Kappa, by the way. My high school.
That's right. She's from Philly.
She's a Philly girl. Philly.
Yeah. My mind is blown at the fact that there's a Living Single group chat right now.
I know.
We actually thought
about
making
that
the reboot.
Can you imagine all the inappropriate group chat?
I mean,
all the inappropriate group chats. Know ours.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I'm like, does Big Les ever drop in? Because, I mean, not for nothing, but she's a part.
She is, but no.
Okay, sorry.
Nah. It's all right. That's all right. But it was great being executive producer and being able to say to them, hey, guys, because I called each one after I got the go-ahead from Lifetime, because I said to Lifetime, I'd really love to, you know, invite my sisters to be a part of this because, you know, the holidays about family and nostalgia and memories. And I think it'd be a really cool look. And we'd had two scenes in this ice skating rink. And I said, what if we, you know, kind of have them there as like this is their ice skating rink that they either own or manage and work there. And we call the ice rink Charlotte for Charlotte Ray. And so they were like, yes, go, please ask. And so I called
each
one.
We're talking about her Facts of Life cast members,
by the way. I was about to say, you're such a good sister.
Thank you. Yeah. And they said yes. And so then I said to them, what kind of character would you like to play? You know, here's our ideas for a story. You know, what do you think? And so it was really great to have them collaborate about their special appearances and things like that. And like Lisa's character in the movie, she's named after Nancy's daughter.
Wow.
Mindy wanted to name her character Rose for her grandmother. There's a food drive component in the movie because Nancy said, I think that compassion and kindness are just something that people miss nowadays. Is that something you can put in your script? I was like, yeah, sure. You know, and then we've got little fun inside jokes and things like Lisa mentions, you know, having a delivery from Edna's Edibles. And, you know, so there's just a whole bunch of fun little touches there in addition to
a brilliant idea or someone's going to be in trouble. I was waiting for that.
Oh, you know what? We tried a couple and it was like, oh, that one's too on
reaching,
the nose. It didn't feel as organic.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. But we did try.
Okay.
Yes.
I see. So what is
actually before you go? You mentioned that you asked. I'm sorry. But I just want to get this. I just want to ask this question before I lose it. You said you asked everybody else what kind of character they wanted to play. What kind of character do you want to play?
Well, thank you. I played. You mean in this movie?
In any movie,
or in general? Like what? Yeah. What's like, actually, that wasn't my question.
Oh,
like,
sorry.
No, bucket listing. Like, is there anything that you haven't done that you wish to do?
Absolutely. The ironic thing about being in the industry for over 40 years is that there's still a lot of characters that I have not played because number one, I started when I was a kid. So you only, you know, for a certain period of time, you can only play kid characters. And then being on long running shows, I mean, it's a blessing, but then you're those characters. So there's a lot of characters that I want to play. There's more genres that, you know, that are being unearthed and created that I want to be a part of. So like the whole graphic novel world. Mm. I can't wait. There's something that
you
we're working
put
on in
together.
There. You know what? We love working together. And that's another thing with the whole reason why I asked my Facts Life sisters. I really have had a great track record working with a lot of great people. And so being able to ask them, you know, to be a part of something that I'm doing now, that's a great, you know, feeling to be able to do it. Don't.
What,
oh,
Bill?
No, I just remembered another story from your book.
Oh, yes.
Tell it.
Can you tell the story of when you were cast as Storm in X-Men?
What?
Oh, you're so mean. Oh, you were so rude for that.
It's a great story, though. It's such
okay,
a wonderful story.
So sometimes I don't read all the detail and stuff. I'll just gloss over it and be like, okay, I got it. It's a horrible thing. It's horrible. I know.
Right.
Horrible. Horrible. And so I got an audition that came in. My manager says, have an audition for X-Men. And he sent me the information. And I was so excited. And they said, it's Storm. And I was like, oh, my God. Hallie's not going to do this anymore. What the hell's wrong with her? But oh, well. one man's trash, another man's treasure. I mean, I went through all the, you know, little colloquialisms. So when I go into an audition, I really prep for it. And so I had my boots and I had my outfit. I mean, I was going in. And then I went to read where the location was for the audition. Turns out it was for a voiceover for the animated series.
Could have did it though, Cam.
Yeah, she wasn't going nowhere. Storm was not available. And if it was, they were not checking for your ass, Kim Fields.
Wow.
But yes, I love creating characters. I absolutely do. And so, like tomorrow, I'm excited. We're dropping on MyLifetime.com as well as on their YouTube channel. We're dropping a short film called Designing Emma. And it's all about how we created the character for the Christmas movie. For hair, makeup, wardrobe, just everything, Designing Emma. Because that, again, I go back to our earlier conversation. I love creating characters. That's what drew me into this when I saw other people doing that as a kid. So any character I've not yet played, I'm doing a new series at the top of the year. I can't tell you what it is just yet, but it's really exciting. But in a way, it's still kind of uncharted territory, even though it's a comedy, even though it's, you know, certain things that I've done. There's still a great deal of it I haven't done. If I haven't done it, you can believe I'm probably going to say yes. Because I just love that, you know. And even with this character in this Lifetime movie, being able to play someone who is dealing with rediscovering, rekindling a romance, going after the issues of family legacy, mm-hmm. And dealing with your inner light, and you see everybody around you just kind of like numb as the new joy. And it's like, no, that's not, no, we have another level of life and lifestyle and laughter and joy to tap into. And so that's a lot of, you know, what my character in this movie is, but really just anything I haven't done, I'm all in for.
Wow. All right. Inspirational words from Kim Fields.
Yes.
Kim Victoria Fields.
That's right.
I see.
Not Kimberly?
No. Kim Victoria Fields. Wait, real quick. Well, there's two minor questions.
Yes.
Now that Atlanta, which I assume is still your home base for now?
Kind of, because we still, you know, have a place here. Harlem is home. Harlem is where, you know, I dug in my heels. But go ahead.
Okay. Well, now that Atlanta has upped its game and be sort mm-hmm. of the industry factor with mm-hmm. this giant mm-hmm. Studio system mm-hmm. in its backyard— do you think that will change at all for opportunities and as far as work is concerned with actors and production? And
well, a lot of cities have stepped up the game. I mean, just being in Vancouver for as long as we were there mm-hmm. and just all the work that's there, I'm like, oh, I'll be right back. I'm going to just go get my kids and my bed.
I love Vancouver, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I can't wait to do more stuff there and get a place there. I mean, it was phenomenal. I loved it.
Okay.
And Tyler's had other studios there, so this is not his first go-round with this. And Marvel has, you know, set up there, and there's a
Marvel
lot of...
Marvel's set up in Atlanta?
Yeah,
at Tyler's.
There's a lot of production that's out there.
Okay.
And smaller companies who do a lot of movies. Swirl Films, they do about, I don't know, 20 movies a year or something. Okay. So a lot of production has been there, but, you know, an actor's life for the most part is really the gypsy life. You know, you go where the work is. There's so much work in Spain. There's work in Florida. I mean, it really is just if you're able to have the lifestyle to commit to it. And our kids are great because they're like, yeah, we got a tutor. We're good. Where are we going?
Nice. Love that. All right. This is my last random question, unless you have another one.
I mean,
go ahead.
Is this a question about Dear Michael and he loves me not at all?
Wow.
Sort of, but go ahead. You can go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, you first.
I'll
man,
back clean
up. Y'all don't answer this question because she a busy lady.
All right, go first, Bill.
Well, I mean, okay, yeah, you put out these two singles, and was it one single or two? I can't remember.
Two singles.
Two. Mm-hmm.
Well, I wasn't sure if it was two releases or just...
Right,
yeah.
An A and a B.
Yeah. He Loves Me and He Loves Me Not and Dear Michael. Mm-hmm. Can you explain how that all came about in 1984?
Sure. It's so funny because just yesterday I was telling Adrian, my leading man in You Light Up My Christmas, that the gentleman who wrote Got to Be There wrote Dear Michael.
Hal David.
And
Elliot Wilinski.
Elliot Wilinski. But okay. Hal Davis also produced both of them and the stuff with me. And so, you know, it's the 80s, it was a time where everybody, if you were a teenager on TV, then you were making a record. I mean, it just, the 70s and 80s, just all the kids, Ralph Carter had one. I mean, just everybody.
Gary Coleman had one too? Gary Coleman?
Yes, he did. You don't remember that?
You lie.
Somebody swindled the cowboy guy. You don't remember that rap that Gary Coleman did?
No.
I brought that 12-inch. I found it in Portland.
I remember Alfonso Ribeiro's breakdance record.
Nah, Gary Coleman did. He spent the last of his money on this rap record where he was like a rapping cowboy.
I'm sorry for that rabbit hole.
I'm going to need you to not bring that up. And because we're talking about when we were kids. Yeah. So everybody, you know, was doing that. And this was also when... Thriller was popping off.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he was about to win all the awards and everything. So the people at Motown was like, oh, you know what? We should redo Dear Michael and get somebody to sing it. Because remember, Michael did it first, and it was as if he was reading a fan letter. So they had the brilliant idea of what if we have someone that it's actually them and their fan letter. And at that time, I was just about the only black girl available around that was on TV, whatever. And they was like, you! And so they asked me to do it, and I did. And then that did so well beyond just kind of the gimmick of he's winning, you know, all these awards and this is, you know, a big deal. And I could carry a tune. So they said, well, let's do a follow-up single. And then that one blew up on the dance charts. And then it was like, wow.
Was there ever
I was performing at the Tropicana. So what?
Was there any thought to doing more music or?
No.
No,
I was good on it. Okay. Yeah. Until I did my smooth jazz spoken word, which is still one of just,
yes.
For me, as an artist, truly one of the greatest things I've ever done.
And impossible to find, by the way.
Yeah,
oh,
it is.
You know what? I will just send you the tracks. I can do that.
That works.
Yes.
Solutions.
Wait, what am I, chopped liver? I'm the one.
You didn't ask. Stop it. Don't be like that. Don't close mouth. Come on.
You should have asked
first.
Yes.
Yeah.
What, you don't have two copies of it?
Yes, it's only one link, and once you open it, that's it.
No, seriously, this is what I'm obsessed with finding out. Do you have a copy of that Jermaine Jackson papier-mâché bust?
You are
Jesus
so
Christ.
Funny. No, I do not.
Really? You didn't take it home from the set or anything?
No, nor do I have any of Regine's wigs. Next.
Oh, okay.
Did you keep anything from those sets, either Living Single or Facts of Life?
No.
None. No. Okay.
Not even a Shireen doll.
Ooh, deep cut.
No, sorry. Oh, deep, but you know what? No, from Living Master Single. Reggie's... No. Wow, Ben Master Reggie. That is so funny. You are in, baby.
He knows.
No, but when I did my final episode of Living Single, the prop guys gave me the large mug and saucer that Regine, I would always, I love drinking hot cocoa and tea and stuff. And so any chance I could in a scene, I would. And so they gave me that, and it says, yes, and it says, we'll miss you very much. We love you. So I do have that.
Okay, so you're properly given a send off.
Yes.
Not just came into work and saw the cake one day and was like,
yeah, no.
Oh,
no, damn. That was planned, yes. That's another episode of QLS.
Well, Ms. Fields, I appreciate you coming here finally.
Finally, baby.
This is the moment we've all been waiting for.
Hey, Amir, can I thank Kim? Can you pass this on to your mom, to your sister?
Yes.
Thank you guys for your time and your energy with us on these. Like, because even people forget, but Alexis, we were watching. She was an era too. So
that's right.
I just want to thank you for that.
I will
for sharing.
Tell her.
It takes a lot.
I will tell her.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you.
On behalf of the QLS fam, Sugar Steve.
Is that your name?
Do you want to know why his name is Sugar
I'm
Steve?
I'm dying to know why.
Oh, okay. He ain't got the time.
So look, Steve has been engineering
Hold on, the Burger King. I'll tell this story. I have diabetes. That's how I got the name.
Thank you for the story.
And we have to wrap.
Thank you, Steve. Yeah. Oh, my God. I love you.
Wait a minute. Is that real?
That's real, yeah.
It's a longer story, though.
He became my engineer.
Yeah. Amir gave him diabetes.
Perhaps my diet wasn't as savory as it is right now. And after 3 months of working with each other, Steve had to start getting insulin shots. Look, there was the world's best. Y'all never seen a spit.
I
never seen a spit take.
I'm so sorry. I don't want to laugh. I swear I don't. But
and as you see, he's drinking sugar now.
Yes,
there's no sugar.
He was my engineer for
that caffeine ain't good.
Doing like the Common Records and the D'Angelo Voodoo Records, and once he became my full time engineer, he sort of adapted to my diet, and we used to go to best soul food spots in Philly. And then 3 months into that,
did you get Scrapple?
Yes, everything. Yes.
I'd like to take this time to apologize to Michelle Huff and everybody who's waiting for Kim Fields right now.
Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Sugar Steve, Boss Bill, Unpaid Bill, Fonticolo, I hope you're doing those cigarettes, bro. And Kim, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. This has been fantastic.
This is Questlove signing off. We will see you next time on the next go-round of Questlove Supreme. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.